Welcome to Neue Deutsche Nachhaltigkeit, New German Sustainability. So I'm very much looking forward to discussing today, not only perspective from Germany, but also from a European, maybe also a global perspective. Mm-hmm. And I have a guest, Kostas, joining me today. And I'm very much looking forward to the conversation we're having today. And I can disclose, it's also the first time that we meet.
Yep.
So I've done, of
course. We're friends already.
But that might change within the next hour. So we will see. No, I'm very much looking forward to it. And of course, I did my homework and a little bit of research to who you are. And a few phrases which popped up when I did my Google search, mm-hmm. they really caught my attention. So there are phrases like the veteran with battle scars. Actually, you don't have them, but maybe.
They're my soul, very yeah. deep scars.
And I also heard things or saw things like you wrote something like grumpy innovator, mm-hmm. And contrarian thinker, controversial innovator. So obviously, you are always stimulating debates. And yep. this is something I'm very much looking forward to. So you can see I've raised already the expectation bar.
Yep.
We will see.
Especially me following you there. Okay.
Thank you. So really welcome. It's great having you. And before we talk about sustainability, also mm-hmm. what it means, sustainability, maybe also in the German or European context, also in the global competition, and also at least what makes me thinking that sustainability is something which we cannot negotiate, which is mm-hmm. just there. We have to do it, but we will see if that's something we're on the same page. Before we talk about those topics, I would like to better understand who you are, and in particular, what brought you here. So maybe you can briefly describe what you have done so far.
So what I've done, well, I guess the most important things that I've done are not related to work. I got married, had children. I'm 52 years old. I live in the Netherlands. I have a professional life, which I am... really proud of, I guess, because it's been a serendipitous journey a little bit from different disciplines stringing together. I started off as an engineer, product developer, developing also manufacturing, environments to build things. And then through a stroke of luck, serendipity, I bumped into to two guys who became very close to me, with whom I set up an innovation consulting business called Happn. That was like 10 years into my career. And I guess the interesting thing was I had learned really well how to make things, and I walked into the world of innovation, which is, let's say, a slightly more abstract space, particularly in consumer goods, where it's all about marketers trying to figure out what people want. And I realized that a huge asset I had in that domain was knowing how you make things. And with that agency, we built it up into a global team. So we had a team in Amsterdam, team in London, team in New York. And that journey lasted for a good 12 or 13 years until 2019. When we sold the business, and 2 years later I left, and I bumped into, I guess, another serendipity, bumped into what is now one of my fellow founders of Unaterra, the investment fund, Luca Zerbini. And I guess maybe it's a life stage thing. We're both early 50s, and you realize, wow, we've put so much crap out in the world through just figuring out ways for people to make them buy new stuff. And he had bumped into an interesting investment opportunity, which was a business called Pulpix. And they do basically paper bottles, more sustainable, let's say, than the plastic and the glass alternatives. And I guess similar to how I brought engineering into marketing innovation, mm-hmm. Luca and myself brought our industrial background into, let's say, VC and sustainable investing. Because we were looking at this and thinking, this is pretty obvious. That's the right solution. Not because it's paper or that it's so much more sustainable than, let's say, plastic solutions, mm-hmm. but because you can fill it on a normal filling line, which no one else was really talking about. We could have invested in 40 different paper bottles at the time,
yeah.
but none of them you would have been able to run on a normal factory down the road, mm-hmm. and this one you could. So we invested and we made some money and realized, well, there's more here. And that sort of lands me here because we realized, again, coming from a very different space than the typical, let's say, VC background, which is usually some kind of financial background, mm-hmm. where kind of you judge the value. Again, generalizing this, of course, very crudely, but you generalize on let's say, the financial structure and the business model, We saw a completely different way of experiencing risk or judging risk, which is how well will it fit into the real world? That's the long answer to your question. So forgive me, Andreas, for being long-winded. I'll try to be shorter from here on.
No, thank you very much.
There's some different things strung in there.
No, you did very well. And thank you very much for sharing your background and also what brought you here. And it's interesting that you started as an engineer, really doing something. And then switching to innovation and finally ending up in impact. And to me, all these things somehow do belong together. And we will talk about that in particular, how the perspective looking at impact or sustainability is mitigating risk. But just as a cliffhanger, we'll talk about that in a second.
So hold my breath on that.
Yes. I mean, it's a great career and it looks very shiny, but I'm sure you also had failures so far. And I think in particular, when we're talking about impact, for me, it's very important that we also talk about what didn't work. So maybe you can share your biggest failure you had so far.
The biggest failure, actually, it's not necessarily related to sustainability, if that's okay, but I think it is. Because I've actually, so a quick book plug, I've literally just finished my my newest book, which is The Disruption Fallacy, which is all about just disrupting for disruption's sake. Is probably not the right thing to do. And it's actually, to a degree, inspired by a failure I experienced probably 8 years into my career. So I was still very much in the engineering phase. And I was an engineering manager for a business that made paint mixing equipment. So whenever you go, say, to a DIY store and you have some paint mixed to the right color, like the beautiful walls here, happened in one of our machines. And we saw a huge opportunity to take that technology into hair salons for hair color mixing. And because it was all still old fashioned with tubes and just really, really stupid old fashioned system. And we thought, well, if you have like a little device and a computer connected to it, you can like come back after 6 months and say, hey, can you sort of recolor in exactly the same color? And, or maybe like a tiny little shade of more brown or more whatever. So we saw all these benefits and we developed a beautiful little machine to do that. Spent a lot of money on it. We put 100 out in the market. And it was an absolute disastrous failure. We hadn't really clocked how, or even considered how the salon owner sort of, for how that business works for them and how they make money selling hair color and coloring hair. But also, when in a DIY store, one of these big paint mixing machines fails, you just think, okay, I don't get my color today. I'll come back tomorrow when the machine is repaired. But when you're in a hair salon and your hair head is on fire with peroxide and the machine fails, that's an emergency. it made me realize you need to understand so much more about where you're going to land with your idea before you can even, you could say, consider what's going to make the difference or not. And not just assume from behind your desk because it sounds right that it'll work. Things are just so hard in reality. It's so, so hard.
No, thank you very much. It's an excellent example of how you can really completely misled by just sitting at your desk and thinking you have a great idea.
It made so much sense. Even now, just describe, because I haven't really spoken about this for a while, but I think it was such a good idea.
No, and I mean, as you know, so one of my career paths also led into philanthropy. And this is something which is really one of the biggest mistakes in philanthropy, that all the donors, philanthropists, in many cases, are not taking the perspective from the beneficiaries. So out of their reality,
I know what you want.
Exactly. And I mean, if there is no acceptance by the beneficiaries, then there is no impact.
Yeah, of course.
The bad thing in philanthropy is, just as a side note, I mean, you immediately were punished by the market because nobody wanted to buy it.
Yes.
If you're doing philanthropy, there is no regulation by the market because, I mean, you're putting the money anyhow on the table, regardless if it's needed or not.
Yeah.
So this is why impact orientation and impact measurement is even more important to philanthropy than to impact investing.
Yeah. The trigger in, let's say, consumer goods innovation would be interesting to know if it's the same in philanthropy or thinking about what do beneficiaries really want. But the trigger is always frustration. If there is something frustrating someone, that means they have their mind open to a solution. And in the case of the hair salons, that wasn't it.
I can see the point. Yeah. Yes, frustration. Yeah, there's a lot of frustration out there also, in particular in the field where the beneficiaries are not really reached. But nobody is listening to them. That's a problem. But we're also changing the philanthropy world. But today we're focusing on impact and impact investing. And before we do that, let me allow a few questions to better understand who you are.
Mm-hmm.
And so I will ask you a few either or questions and you quickly decide.
Oh, well.
So,
okay.
Dog or cat?
A cat.
Mountains or beach?
Mountains.
So now, Metallica or Vivaldi?
Metallica.
Come on. This is something you could have already guessed. So, because on the shirt you can read metal. So, obviously, you're a metalhead. And as it's known also in the podcast, at the end, I will ask the guests always what kind of music in particular, which song they brought. Mm. So, I'm very curious already.
It's not going to be metal. It's going to be, but it's a special. Okay.
Okay. So, just raise the expectation. But it's good. Beer or wine?
Wine.
Okay.
Yeah.
You're Dutch, aren't you?
I am. But I cannot handle a lot of beer. It just puts me to sleep.
Okay.
Yeah.
We're working on that. So you come to Berlin, I can help you. So now it becomes a little bit more sophisticated. So I offer you a half-year sabbatical. So you can either go to China or to the US, where you want to go.
Oh, China, hands down.
Okay, well, that was a very quick answer. Why?
Because China has a particular, and you can, this is not a political statement in any way, let me make that clear, but China has a particular innate progressiveness right now of wanting to develop, wanting to go forward. And I think it comes from literally just having lifted 600 million people out of poverty, where everyone's sort of out there to make the best for the next generation. If I look at the US, I was there last year, even with my wife, we went to the Dolly Parton, the theme park. Dollywood, very nice recommendation. But what you can kind of see is a society that doesn't really know what to do with themselves. There is not this innate drive anymore, which it had still very strong. Like when I came out of university in, let's say, mid-90s, for a lot of my fellow students, next step was the US. That would just not be the case right now. If I look at my boys who are 22 and 19, I would not be surprised if they look east rather than west. That's just the reality I see.
That's reality. I mean, the question is, do we have to accept that? I mean, I still haven't given up on the transatlantic alliance. Mm. So, I also have...
You asked about a sabbatical, though.
That's right. That's right. So we are just putting a lot of questions on top of this question. Yeah. But I think we can make a special podcast just talking about how we can refresh and re-energize the Western unity. But anyhow, so next question. So I give you a million...
Mm-hmm.
Or euros, and you have to donate them. So do you provide them to immediate help in the Sudan for food, or is it more that you are putting it into a agenda setting climate action organization?
Yeah, probably the latter. I'm very much the sort of teach someone how to fish and sort of they will never be hungry again. So I am more of the long term sort of putting my money, because I also know that's kind of what helped me in my early youth also. So just giving a pot of money. I'm sure there is a way to make that work, but it's not how I'm wired or would know how even to do that the right way.
Yeah, I completely understand. I never judge people who are making a philanthropic decision, but for me personally, it's always better to work on the systems level than immediate care, even though it's sometimes so urgent and needed. And it's difficult to make a decision at the end of the day.
Yeah. Absolutely.
But thanks for sharing. And now the last question, and here I already guess what you're going to answer, but so another million, but now you have to invest into it. So is it more in stock listed companies or startups?
Oh, startups.
That was an easy one.
That's easy.
So now we have already now paved the road to Unaterra. So you already said a little bit of the beginning, but maybe give us a better understanding. So what are you doing with the...
Better flavor, maybe. So, because what I don't want to do is go into the language of like Article 9 and sort of mechanics of... So what's pulled me into this? And I guess together with Luca originally and what sort of, you could say the whole crew, because there's now 6-7 people sort of in the bundle, all working hard to make this work. I guess what triggered us was realizing... You can break sustainability down into a commercial story relatively easy. And the way to do it is say, well, if I use less energy and if I use less material or wastefulness of material, like material not being used for the actual product I'm putting together, then I'm automatically doing something which is probably better for the planet And it's also a commercial proposition because I'm using less energy and less material. What it does come with is an understanding that you do need to fundamentally rethink what your product's going to be to be able to achieve that. Mm. So it's also, I mean, if you look at the businesses we've invested in, they're all sort of rethinking how their particular product or offer works in the world and helps do one of those two.
Yeah. Of course. Can you give one example?
I can give multiple examples, yes, because we've now done three investments with a couple lined up. But I mentioned Pulpex already before. Probably a really interesting other one is the second one we did is a business called Grey Parrot, who basically do waste sorting. So imagine like literally this table is a waste sorting line that sort of flies past at 6 meters a second with all these bits of plastic on. What Grey Parrot does is says, well, we have this really simple box, which you just suspend over the waste sorting system. And what it does, it has a very simple camera, but it's connected to a computer and a database and an AI system. And what it does is instead of using very complicated sort of lighting tricks and sort of camera tricks to judge, okay, is this material, is it a PET or is it an HDPE or whatever other, say, plastic? What it does is it makes sort of a first guess. It's like, okay, it's transparent, it's colored, it's whatever. But then it looks, okay, do I recognize the shape? Do I see a little logo? And of course, then very quickly, you can say, okay, and not just maybe it's PET. You can say, I know this was originally a piece of a 330 ml bottle by Coca-Cola. And then it can just look up what it is. So what you see is you're basically not changing the infrastructure because the line stays the way it is, but you're making, you could say, the whole process more sustainable, more circular, because that's, of course, what Una Terra is all about. How do you make existing material streams more circular? And you can achieve this without interrupting it and without saying, oh, we need a whole new sorting line and then we can come back and build something new. Because, of course, if you can use existing systems, you can scale on those existing systems much, much more easily. So I guess over the course of the past, in the first year, year and a half that we were figuring out, okay, what are even the businesses we're attracted to? Because we think it's interesting what they're doing, which always had some kind of connection to physical material and a connection to using existing infrastructures, production systems, etc. We realize indeed circularity is really the domain we want to be playing in because it's a domain we understand as founding team. And it is, I mean, when people talk about circular economy, sometimes they think about something over there, sort of far away. But no, it's literally what gets products to the table every day. It's just making those streams more circular. Have them generate less waste. When they generate waste, find a way to pull it back in, reduce the energy consumption, et cetera. So that's kind of what we're doing with Una Terra. So we're looking for organizations, I guess, using some VC language, sort of Series A. That's kind of our bit of a sweet spot. So generating some revenue.
So just for the ones who do not know that, so what does Series A mean?
Yeah, so the simplest way to say is the technology is more or less set. It works on a small scale. There's no sort of flip-flopping anymore of trying to find a market or a particular technology needs to be developed. And you're at the stage, you've proven there is demand. So you have real customers and you're just now looking to go big. And this for us is a nice place to get involved because for myself and say the fellow team in Una Terra, we're all quite knowledgeable, I would say, how old industry works, who are already operating at scale and who are saying, we have all these dirty problems. We're looking for new things. You just need to make sure that they interface with how we work. That's about as that's it. There is no more.
No, but that's a lot. Yeah. And I mean, again, now you're bringing in all your expertise as an engineer, as an innovator, and into the impact space.
Yeah.
I mean, you have one assumption that using less energy, producing less waste, is also paying off in the business case.
Yeah.
So this requires that also there are some regulation out there, which also makes things which do harm the world more expensive. At least in many cases, I think that's why I think a lot of sustainable companies are still in a disadvantage because it's not priced equally.
Yes, that's that's a whole separate podcast probably on fair pricing systems. Yes is the short answer. And I think there will be some categories where you could say the ugly stuff prices itself out, especially if the if a regulation is simply demanding, for example, that let's say in packaging that you have a minimum amount of let's say recycled material coming back in, then and the systems are slowly growing and being put in place to be able to provide that volume of feedstock, you can also imagine that by definition it should become cheaper than the virgin material. But yeah, it takes time. Is maybe also something which is easily not necessarily overlooked, but there is this, and maybe it's this heroic generation of millennials who've grown up with Marvel movies and Harry mm-hmm. Potter, just think with a sort of waving the wand and things will change. Hey, just to sort of getting a factory to change from one the same material to another material, that might take like just 2 years just in working it through and making sure the factory doesn't shut down. So bigger changes might take a decade, might take even longer. So I think also maybe, yeah, and this is probably also where philanthropy has also a role to play, is a sort of, I guess, what they call the patient capital.
Exactly.
Sort of, we don't need to see a return tomorrow. Yeah. And of course, yeah.
No, that's completely right. And this is why I'm always keen on how to combine philanthropy as a catalytic money, automating, doing the gender setting as necessary, and then enabling or mobilizing the impact investing capital.
Yeah.
No, thank you very much. I mean, that makes a lot of sense also how you are investing. And as a side note, so as I said, so the first time we are sitting together, we also should have a follow up because I'm active as an angel. So that means, and the value chain of life cycle of a company very early on.
Yeah.
And one of my startups is Shit to Power. And they are now entering into the Series A, and that could fit into your scope. So let's talk about that later on. Now, I would like to use a little bit of your perspective as an innovator. Mm-hmm. And maybe you can go back into history. Mm-hmm. Not your personal history, but human history.
Yeah.
So what would you think has been maybe the biggest innovation having a positive impact on the world, and maybe also the biggest innovation we have seen with a negative impact? I know it's usually both sides, but maybe you can say what, to your mind, are the most interesting, most relevant innovations with positive and or negative impacts.
Yeah, so on positive, they're not necessarily sustainability related, a little
bit. No, just you can.
I would say urban sewage systems and penicillin. Where, of course, penicillin was a complete sort of random serendipity of a discovery, whereas sewage systems in big cities were, of course, planned and, I guess, grew over time. I don't think there's anything that has done more for the health of humans than those two. One is 80 years old and the other is now, 2,000 years old, but very, very positive. I think negative, probably... I think I have a couple of very negative answers. One is the, and this is from my recent old world, which is basically consumer goods and food, the combination of polyethylene and sugar in, let's say, food and packaging, or packaging and food. The thing is, sugar, you don't need too much of as a human, but it is the perfect food ingredient. It's cheap, it's tasty, it's bulk, it's easy to produce, it's easy to sort of put into other products. So it's always going to be the default, let's say, ingredient too often to switch to. Polyethylene grew into like the most single-use plastic in the world because it's cheap, it's easy to form, it's easy to produce, easy to create, etc. And separately, they're evil in a way, but together, I think they are behind the obesity crisis, the health of humans going down and everything. And they're also, well, I guess polyethylene, it's a massive polluter. So luckily, it's easy to recycle. My God, had we known what we were starting with that, say 50, 60 years ago, who knows?
Thank you very much. That was very insightful. And I'm a molecular biologist, so I should have known about that. But honestly, I wasn't aware at least of how severe that is. But I mean, that's also makes sustainability. So also analyzing what goes wrong and what new innovations do we need to replace that. So hopefully we will see replacements pretty soon.
We will. But again, we're looking at industries, let's say in the mass markets, that are typically 80 to 100 years old. They have ingrained behaviors. There are ways of doing things. And a lot of the products that you'd rather not see, they're not going to go away quickly because they are embedded deep in culture, deep in way sort of products are made. And they serve their purpose. So you can only replace them. It's the oldest marketing rule in the book. You can only get a person to switch to your product if you have something which is genuinely better. Not just because you say it's better. It really has to be. And that's the challenge we have. That's a challenge we've picked up with Una Terra. Finding more circular solutions, people mm-hmm. we know, people will say yes to. That's
Thank you very much that you are taking the challenge and that you are.
Wish us luck.
I do, fingers crossed. And the good thing is, you are not alone. We are not alone. I do see that impact sustainability is really a big movement.
Yeah.
And this is why I'm a very optimistic person. And so now we have already come to an end for today's podcast.
You have an hour. Oh wow,
You have to come back.
Yeah,
then we can do a few of deep dives into topics we have just briefly discussed. For me, it was extremely inspiring. Thank you very much for that.
Thank you.
And the aim of our podcast is of course to inform a little bit, but also to motivate and also hopefully give a little bit of hope that there are solutions out there. And I saw a lot of hope and good ideas for a bright future. So thank you very much for sharing that, for inspiring, for giving hope. And the last question is, what is the song you
wrote? Oh, the song. So this is a song by a band called Phosphorescence with PH. And the song is called Song for Zula. And it is it's a song which has, for me personally, a hypnotic effect, I've realized. I came across it completely sort of randomly. It was woven into a documentary and the visuals shown on screen were literally, it was called When Google Dreams, where it was actually showing as an early AI of the Google database trying to interpret what a dog is. And what it looks like is literally, you know these little videos when you zoom into a fractal landscape, it just keeps zooming. So that effect, but then with sort of dog elements, eyes, snouts, ears, tails. And just so you have this like, and I'm a cat person, so you're zooming into this sort of bizarre visual. And then the Phosphorescent song has this sort of, it's a beautiful song, beautiful orchestration. And I still like on a very regular basis, I just start it just when I sort of need to sort of get my mind off something because I'm taken back into that hypnotic space.
Thank you very much. So I'm very much looking forward to that. It's going to be in the show notes. And thank you very much. And
thank you.
Everything will be good.
A real pleasure, Andreas.